Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 102 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet.
It's so exciting being in the triple digits.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to say that. 102.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's awesome. So, we're coming up on a 2-year anniversary with it then, right? Well, episode 104 will be, episode 105 will be the 3rd year.
Well.
Starting.
We missed a couple, right? Like the first year, definitely.
We did not do it
as consistent as we probably should have. Remember, we had a couple of bye weeks and we weren't really sure how to record on the road. So like when you were traveling or when I was traveling or when we were traveling together for like conferences and stuff, we skipped some.
Skipped a few.
Yeah.
So we're probably in our 3rd season, but we haven't quite pushed out that many episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
What did the weather rock say coming into the office today? Did you see it or did you hear it? Or
I didn't look at the weather rock, but I can tell you what I felt. It was partly cloudy, 60, slight breeze coming from the west. Just kidding. I don't know.
Wow.
I have no idea, but it is, it's partly cloudy out there. It's looking like spring. Thankfully we had a really dreary couple of days last week in like the low 40s and kind of overcasty and gross.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm hoping that since yesterday was the official first day of spring, that we will actually start to see some nicer, warmer weather.
Hopefully, we've avoided the, ice storms and the major wind storms.
Yeah.
Although in Texas last week, they had 70-mile-an-hour sandstorms going on at my brother's place.
Yeah, Brother that's Allen's. Pretty crazy.
So
the wind does sound kind of wicked, if you will, like at my house. I have a wind chime in the basement or out the basement door, and you can just hear it dinging all day long. And then the wind starts to go, and you can hear it whistling through the screens on the windows.
Yeah.
I don't know if everyone is, maybe it's just cheap windows at my house. I don't know.
So, how did Dr. Reese do last week co-hosting?
I think Dr. Reese did fantastic.
Okay. I hate to admit I did not listen to the podcast.
Of course.
But good. Thank you, Dr. Reese, for doing that. We will try to bring you on, maybe some more episodes and maybe get other people to co-host. I don't know. We haven't had anybody on in a while.
Yeah.
So, anyway, spring is upon us. We know that because all of the leaves, the dead leaves have fallen off the trees, which I got to rake up and haul away yesterday. The green grass is coming. The pollen is on our vehicles.
I'm totally not ready for the pollen.
It's going to be beautiful, but yeah. Allergies are kicking in on people. Allergies are kicking in on pets. I predict that we will see probably an idiopathic geriatric vestibular dog within the next 30 days, because I really feel like that is kind of related to allergies that gets it going.
Gotcha.
And so that's just where these old dogs come in and their world's turned upside down. They have a head tilt typically. They have some nystagmus going on in their eyes and they cannot get right in this world. And so usually we just treat them symptomatically and over time they typically get better over a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So we should be seeing that. I actually saw I still have some tests pending. But I saw Junior last week, who I believe has granulomatous meningoencephalitis.
Oh, no.
Which is kind of a sterile meningitis, that I feel, again,
so
is often related kind of to an allergy.
Inflammation of the meninges,
which is the lining of the spinal cord canal, and brain tissue. So he actually exhibited these signs last year at about the same time.
What were the signs, if you don't mind my asking?
Sudden, acute, out of the ordinary, just out of the blue pain. Look at him, and all of a sudden he just screams out in horrible pain. And in his case, there's a little bit of localization to the left front leg. So anyway, so yeah, that's that. Spring related, but I didn't really prepare a word for the week. You wanted to talk about, I'll let you go ahead and say it.
Anal glands.
Anal glands.
Which is the safer way. Which are often
called, the glands are often called sacs. And so I was going to say we need to be very careful in our enunciation.
Yes.
Talking about anal glands or sacs.
So I think it's always safer in our industry when we talk about them as a gland, because it can be very misheard, I guess.
And really, they're really, it's really both, right? It is a sac structure that has glandular tissue on the lining that produces the rather odoriferous anal sac
excrement
juice.
I don't know what you want to call it.
So anyway,
so. All right, so we'll make that.
So that is our word of the week, evidently, because we
brought it up. Word of the week and our healthy pet, happy life segment. And so essentially, the anal glands, or as Dr. Miller said, the anal sacs, S-A-C-S, are small glands near the anus in many mammals, including dogs and cats. Do you know of any other mammals that have them? Quiz.
Not off the top of my head, but I'm sure there are.
So, like wolves, coyotes, right? Like those kinds of things. I mean,
those are going to be dog species.
Bears.
Bears do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would not have guessed that.
Sea otters.
Sea otters. What about monkeys?
I'm sure monkeys are probably in there. Actually, you know what? I don't know that they are. I'll have to look that up. But do you remember, probably, I don't know, a long time ago, we talked about a kinkajou?
I don't remember that.
Do
you have a picture of one?
I can find one. But essentially, one of our VMG mate managers had a kinkajou.
Okay, I remember now.
And so kinkajous also are tropical rainforest mammals, and they do also have anal sacs or anal glands.
Okay, so what is the... We don't really know why they have them, but it is assumed that it is to help mark territory. As they defecate, maybe the contents gets on their stool and it helps them either self-recognize or somebody else. But that's the only theory I've ever heard as to why these animals have them.
Yep. So let's talk about where they are, right? So they're a pair of glands located not quite internally, not quite externally. I don't even know what you call that.
Well, they're under the skin. I mean, so they're kind of in the subcutaneous.
Sebaceous. I don't know. So...
Subcutaneously,
At roughly in dogs and cats, like the 4 and 8 o'clock, if you're looking at it a clock.
4 to 5, 8, 7 to 8, okay. Kind of in that range.
They're within that sphincter muscle or just behind it.
Right. The duct actually goes like right underneath the external anal sphincter.
Okay. So
and then the gland is kind of tucked in there as well.
And as you suggested, they secrete a liquid that most believe is used for identification.
Yeah.
Okay.
And how would you describe the liquid? The smell of the liquid. It's very distinct.
If you've ever been in a seafood market in the morning when all the old seafood is dying and they're bringing in all the fresh seafood, that's what it reminds me of.
Okay. To me, it's kind of a metallic smell. And that's,
oh, gross.
That's hard, but if you've ever smelled like tin, not steel, but more of a tin kind of a metallic smell. And it's really a combination. So the reason you bring this up is...
Well, quite frankly, because I need to go home and express my dog's anal sacs. That's why.
Okay.
It's disgusting.
Okay. So the number one cause for a dog scooting on the ground with their back legs tucked up, moving or pointed forward, and scoot, 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 scoot is contrary to the popular belief that it's usually worms, which it can be, but it's more often that their anal sacs are full or we would say they are impacted. Correct?
Yeah, so essentially the whole healthy pet part of this is that when your dog is doing that, they need to be assisted in excreting them.
I usually would tell my clients, you know, if you see that and it happens more than 2 or 3 times, you know, two or three different occurrences, then let's go ahead and bring them in and we'll help them empty them out. Because instead of it being liquid, it oftentimes gets very chunky. They can get infected.
Impacted.
The other thing you'll notice beyond scooting is a lot of times they will try to reach around and lick that area just because it's sore, and they will clean themselves as well.
So that's the behavior that I noticed this morning with Tovin. So I heard this like sucking, chewing noise, and it's very distinct of a dog like chewing and sucking and trying to express their own anal sacs, I guess. But yeah. When he stood up, he had this nice wet patch on his back end, and I was like, oh, great.
Lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's like 80 pounds. So to get him into the bathtub and washed off and to get that done, it's pretty disgusting. Yeah. So typically most pets don't have to have them expressed. Is that a fair statement? As long as there's no problems.
I think the more active they are and the more they are allowed to scoot and run and play and do all these things.
And have normal stools.
I mean, there are products out on the market to increase the bulk of the stool to aid.
The thought there is as the stool passes, it's going to put pressure on against the gland.
Yeah. And I don't know if that really works or not. I've never recommended those products. Usually most dogs are going to take care of it on their own, but the more we humanize them and the more they are house dogs only, I think, probably the more they're going to need to have their anal glands expressed. So, two other things I was going to mention. As an owner, if you smell this smell, oftentimes when your pets get really excited or stressed or afraid, they will express their anal sacs.
Yes.
And it's just like tensing up, whether you're tensing your fist or other parts of your body, when you get really upset and anxious, they will do the same thing. And then another really common time for them to express their anal glands is if they've been through a very traumatic event, such as being hit by a car or other major accident, then typically you're going to have that smell. So maybe just a heads up on, why that smell is there.
Do you typically think that there is a relation to dogs being overweight and having more anal sac issues?
I would think yes. I would think so.
I feel like I don't have any studies to prove it, but I feel like as a working technician on the floor, the dogs that come in that typically need their anal sacs expressed on a routine basis are those that are tending to be a little bit more overweight.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree with that. So,
yeah.
Okay, well, that was interesting. One other comment I just wanted to throw in on the Healthy Pet Happy Life segment here is tons and tons of pets were acquired during the pandemic, and most of them, at least later on, were new puppies or kittens, correct?
Yeah.
A lot of the shelters, they started having a deficiency of animals to adopt out,
mm-hmm.
and so all of these new pets came in, and most of them were examined and vaccinated up, until they were 16 weeks or older. We got them fully protected for a year.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's time to realize when you get those reminders or if you already had your yearly appointment set up, that your pet does need to be seen on a yearly basis. Yearly testing is typically recommended for dogs here, heartworm test, fecal testing for internal parasites, and then discuss with your veterinarian what vaccines are going to be appropriate for you and your dog's lifestyle, and then strongly consider some annual blood and or urine testing
mm-hmm.
to make sure your pet is healthy.
Sure.
So that you and your pet will have a very happy life.
So I think more importantly, for people that aren't in our specific region or locale, if you will, I know a lot of our VMG mates, they weren't doing wellness stuff. They closed mm-hmm. their doors to wellness, and they were only seeing, sick, even for people who had new puppies and kittens. And so I feel like if you were living in an area where you felt like wellness care was not provided during the pandemic, I can assure you it is now open.
Yeah.
And so if you do have a naive adult now puppy or kitten, it is highly recommended to bring them in and at least get them their core vaccines. And so as an adult dog, they will likely still need to go through a series of vaccines, at least one,
mm-hmm.
Versus now like the dogs that we have vaccinated here in the practice, they're now going to start getting their adult series, which we have talked about before. We like to do 3-year protocols for them.
Right. If they were fully vaccinated as a pup or once they are fully vaccinated, then when they come back in a year, we would highly encourage a 3-year vaccine protocol. So that's a good point, though, that you brought up. So we assume all these people that got new pets have taken them to the veterinarian during the pandemic, and that's a wrong assumption.
It's a very wrong assumption.
And so I was just thinking, and I'm going to predict, once the world opens back up and people start getting exposed to other people and dogs start getting exposed to other dogs and where they have been, we are probably going to see an uptick in adult dogs in particular that come down with parvoviral enteritis.
And like distemper.
Maybe some of these old diseases.
These diseases that we thought we had under control because we were vaccinating majority of the population, and now.
We know the importance of vaccines for COVID. No matter if you're on the top of the fence, the left side, the right side, everybody does have an opinion, but with pets, we strongly would encourage you to make sure that they are protected with vaccines. One of the big reasons is I have only seen maybe, I'm going to say, less than 5 adult dogs with parvo, and their owners kind of maybe assumed that they were vaccinated, but they just never really followed up to prove that. And all of the dogs that I saw and treated, or someone else was treating, passed away. They did not make it. So it hits an adult much harder than a puppy. It sits hard on a pup, but adults that contract it, it's really, really hard on them.
Yeah.
So very similar to coronavirus with parvovirus. We treat them symptomatically.
Of course, yeah.
It's a virus. We can't kill the virus.
Yep.
So that's a big, maybe a big...
A lot of times it's nursing care, right? So like we see the puppies and kittens, or puppies essentially, here in the hospital on IV fluids and IV antibiotics and that kind of thing. And it's really just treating those secondary issues, right? The fact that they're not hungry, they're not eating. Yep. We're kind of giving them parenteral nutrition.
We hydrate them. We treat them, you know, we treat their symptoms. We try to keep them from vomiting. We try to slow down diarrhea. To your point, they can't kill a virus, but you can kill a bacteria. Mm-hmm. And once they get these viral infections in their gut, with parvo in particular, it completely just strips away the villi of the gut. And then the bacteria that are normally passing through the GI tract will colonize the small intestine. And then the pup will absorb that into its bloodstream. And now we've got a septic, really, really sick pup. So we do cover them. So yeah, big take-home points. Can't kill a virus, but you can kill a bacteria if you're on the appropriate antibiotics.
And with vaccines, we've talked about it before, right? So like, we always want you to have a relationship with your veterinarian and bring them into the hospital, especially us, right? Because we feel like we do a really good service for you and your pet. But if finances are a concern, or if you're living in an area where maybe a veterinary practice is a little bit farther away, do consider a vaccine clinic. It's better than nothing. It's better than not getting your pet vaccinated at all.
Absolutely. We've talked about, you know, some of the lower cost wellness and vaccine clinics. And although that's not our model, there certainly is a benefit for them to protect the companion animal population out there, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, just make sure you know what you're seeking, and try to make the best decisions for you and your pet.
Can I share something that's kind of like funny, but also like most people won't get it?
Sure. Do I have a choice?
Sure. No, you don't. But so I had a phone interview the other day with Wendy Myers, who is considered industry leader consultant in our industry, namely for CSR, customer service reps, that kind of thing. We've actually had our staff go through some of her training programs and that kind of thing as well. But I received a phone call from her, and one of the front desk ladies came to me, Rachel, and she says, hey, Wendy Myers is on the phone for you. And I was like, oh,
how did you answer the phone, Rachel?
Yeah. And she goes like, is that the Wendy Myers calling for you? And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm like big time like that.
Wow.
So anyways,
that's funny.
She just wanted to interview and talk about what we're using Pet Pro Connect for and how we're doing our video chat and stuff like that. But I thought it was kind of interesting, our staff was kind of like starstruck by a phone call.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, she has done a world of good for our industry as far as training CSRs. A lot of what we did from day one was based on her recommendations, because a lot of that just, it makes sense.
Yeah. she's putting together a lot of, and not to, to kind of dumb it down, but she's putting together a lot of common sense things and things that consumers appreciate, and telling people, like, don't be so selfish. Do it this way.
Right. So you don't end a phone call with, yeah, no problem.
Yeah, know? Exactly.
Or
we're not friends, right? Yeah, there's a professionalism that we need to uphold.
My pleasure. And yeah, mm-hmm. some of those, just those professional ways to say things. So
yep, for sure.
Curbside care.
Curbside care.
I'm starting to get, I don't know, I feel like more people, you know, how much longer are y'all going to provide curbside care? And the answer is, we don't know.
Forever, I think.
We don't know.
There's always going to be an aspect of curbside care.
There will, but when are we going to open the lobby? And that's going to depend on GVMA, AVMA, state of Georgia. It's going to depend on a lot.
Sure. The comfortability of our staff, right?
Yep.
We don't want to put people out and make them uncomfortable for, you know.
Yeah.
Then also the training of our staff we've talked about. We've been doing things this way for a year, and we've created habits, and now uncreating them or creating new habits is going to be a little bit of a time change for us. So
I had just a quick little interview myself this week for, I'm going to do, as you know, I'm going to be interviewed for, I think, an hour for a webcast. Is that?
Yeah.
It's kind of it's a video podcast.
Yep.
That David Hall will be kind of leading. So I talked with him this past week, and I did start looking at some of the interview questions. And
David Hall of Genius Vets.
Of Genius Vets, yeah. So I think the podcast is Wednesday the 28th. That, I don't know. That's wrong, because today's the 21st, which is a Sunday. Anyway, we'll put something out whenever that goes out so that people can find it. But one of the interesting questions that I preliminary answered that I was going to pose to you was, what are you most looking forward to whenever things get back to normal in your animal hospital?
Gosh, so the one thing I think that makes us different as an animal hospital and my job enjoyable is the relationships with the clients. So actually, and I know a lot of animal hospitals, you know, because I follow a lot of like Facebook threads and that kind of thing, they've really enjoyed not having the clients in the building because like there's this like liberating freedom, I guess, or that you don't have to be concerned so much with your professionalism or with everything that's going on. I don't know, for whatever reason. Well, but
and also a lot of veterinarians, myself included, are kind of introverted.
Yeah.
And you know, for
sure.
You have to learn how to talk to and communicate and quote unquote deal with people.
Yeah.
So.
But I'm actually good. I miss that a lot. I miss kind of seeing our clients come into the building and build relationships with our staff. I don't know. As I've said and shared my, I guess, corny mannerisms before or whatever it is, but like one of the things that really I thrive on in this industry is seeing people love their pet and take care of them the best that they can. And so, yes, we see it, but we don't actually see it. Do you know what I mean? Like we're not witnessing that human animal bond. We're not witnessing like the 8-year-old kid who just got a new kitten and she's like loving it to death in the exam room. And, you know, she's wincing because it has to get a shot and she knows how painful shots are. You know what I mean? Like we're just missing that relationship of things. That's what I miss.
People are very trusting, you know, have been very trusting through this pandemic, more so than we ever thought.
Of course.
Taking our recommendations with really not much questioning, assuming that we're doing what we say we're doing, which we are, obviously. But yeah, it's kind of weird. We are involving them in the healthcare of the pet, but not as much as we were before,
mm-hmm.
because we can't have as much of a open conversation, I guess, face to face.
Yeah.
We are at our practice currently trying to, my challenge to the doctors is try to have FaceTime with the client at some point during the visit.
Yeah.
But that FaceTime is outside. So our clients are staying in their car wearing a mask. We are going outside with the mask and we are stepping back from the car and we're having some conversation. And they, you know, when we first started, they loved it. They're like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen you in a year. So good for you to, you know, so happy to come out.
Don't you just miss reading people's like facial expressions?
Yeah.
Even in the grocery store, right? So like, unless someone's got a couple of eye wrinkles and you can tell when they smile, I mean, it's just so bare.
Yeah. So for you, it'd be letting clients back in the building and having that one-on-one conversation.
Yeah, it's just that relationship building.
Yeah,
is what I would call it.
I mean, me as well, but ultimately not wearing a mask.
Okay.
And I'm going to really, really hope that we're not going to wear masks anytime we're around somebody else forever.
Yeah. Maybe for the next year.
Maybe for a while, but I am sick of wearing a mask.
Although, I mean, the other states like Texas and who else did it? Yep. Illinois or somebody.
Yes.
Iowa, I don't know, maybe.
Colorado, but.
But a lot of those other states, they've, you know, released the mask mandate. I haven't heard or seen anything super negative in the media.
Yep.
Which is where we would hear it from, I'm sure.
But, I'm a little congested, I feel like, sounding today. And I feel like I have been throughout this whole process. And gotcha. I think a lot of that is wearing a mask.
So, you know what's interesting? I went to the dentist, a week ago for just a routine biannual cleaning. Biannual, is that right? Twice a year, not yes. every 2 years?
Yes.
How do you say every 2 years? Is it biannual
two
as well?
Years, I don't know. Every other year? Every 2 years?
Anyways, I definitely go to the dentist as recommended every 6 months. But the hygienist, you know, I have a permanent retainer behind my lower bottom incisors from having braces as an adult, so my teeth don't shift.
Mm-hmm.
And because my salivary gland is there, I routinely build up a little bit of extra plaque and that kind of thing. And she
Nasty,
told me,
gross.
I know it's disgusting, right? But she told me that she's seen it actually in a lot of people more now that we're all wearing masks, because if you think about it, you're wearing a mask and you're breathing back in the same thing that you're exhaling, and so the bacteria count in your mouth is much greater. So I thought that was a very interesting fact.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I got on that tangent, but a mask, I'm kind of ready to get rid of them as well.
Yeah.
But if we could see people, I would wear a mask. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
I would
it's
take
gonna be a
one
transition.
Versus the other.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, I totally agree. I remember early on in this thing, I thought about getting us the dental face shields that we use, which is just a full clear plastic shield coming down in the front of your face and slightly wrapping around. I'm sure most of you have seen people out in the public wearing them,
yep.
but they do nothing to prevent particles and air from circulating around the sides or underneath.
So nothing for you to inhale them. They just really kind of deter like respiratory
like
particles landing on you,
droplets,
or maybe,
you know,
getting into your
out.
Mucosa. Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, we thought maybe that was like brilliant because we could see people and they could see us,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't really give you enough protection.
Yeah, and then the whole plexiglass thing, which I'm sure everybody's seen.
Yeah.
We thought about that as well, but thankfully we've not done that.
We held off, and I'm glad.
I'm super glad as well. I feel like I've said this before, but just all the things that we've so come accustomed to, like walking in somewhere and seeing plexiglass everywhere, or
yeah.
barren shelves in stores that used to be fully stocked. It's kind of disappointing when you look at it from that regard, but like, I understand we're having inventory issues. I understand
yeah.
that we're trying to do what's best for everybody.
Yeah, everybody's got a different take. You go to the grocery store and they may have a relatively small plexiglass, you know, between you and the checker outer.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've talked about this before because I don't know what they're called. Checker outer people.
Cashier is what
cashiers.
I would consider them.
But then you go elsewhere and they've got the whole wall plexiglass. And I mean, it's nobody
yeah,
knows is the problem.
Exactly. For sure.
You know, not to, well, no, I'm not going to go down that. Never mind. So
keep your thoughts to yourself.
I'm going to keep my thoughts to myself. I'm a little too opinionated at times. But back to the mask, the most interesting mask that I've seen. I've seen some really big old burly dudes wearing a mask that looks like an Elizabethan collar. So they're often clear. They go from the chin up to, so they cover the bottom of the chin and they cover the nose. They go a little bit above the nose and they're conical. They're funnel shaped.
Yeah, but it's plastic.
And
it's
I'm like,
not
fabric. Yeah, it looks like an Elizabethan collar.
For your nose.
Yeah, and again, now this guy's got all of the droplets dropping down, all the particles coming in from everywhere, but yet he feels protected. So maybe he is. So we're about to run out of time and I knew we had nothing to talk about today. But real quickly, my former college I went to.
Alma mater.
No, you can't say that. I almost said that. But
why
in Texas A&M, once an Aggie, always an Aggie. So you are not an alumni at Texas A&M. Do you know what you're called?
An aggregator?
No. A former student.
That's
Association of Former Students. So
how is that different than an alumni?
Because that means you went to that school and now you no longer are part of that school. You graduated from there. Once an Aggie, always an Aggie. Former student. So you learn something new every day. So anyway, Texas A&M, it was the first place that that new UK variant of SARS-CoV-2 that was in the news months ago.
Yeah.
2-3 months ago. And I haven't really heard a whole lot about it. But they were able to isolate that new variant from a dog, I believe.
I think it's a dog and a cat. Yeah.
From the same household in Brazos County, which is where that's the county that Bryan College Station is located in, which is where Texas A&M is. So
interesting. Just think about all of the big pharma doing research, all of the universities doing research on COVID. I mean, they're bound to discover something. I don't want people to feel like this is like running rampant, these variants in animals. Yeah, I mean, they're looking for it. And as you know, with most things, if you go looking, you're going to find it.
Right. So, you know, one of the points of the story, it doesn't say that these pets were sick. I'm assuming they were not, or it would have said so. But they just feel like it's important to make sure we have some procedures and protocols in place to monitor these different viral genomes, because it is jumping from, you know, species to species, and we know other viruses do that as well. So,
Of course.
Did you have any other story you wanted to talk about?
I don't think so. No, we can talk about more things next week, like the most popular dog breeds for 2020.
For the 30th straight year.
Yeah, who would have known, right? But let's leave that little teaser out there for next week.
Okay, yeah, send us your guess if you have a guess. So.
For sure. Check in next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our blogs and our website at mygavet.com. Please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.
Now if you say you're stuffy.